Hi. So the panel that Neil just described is crisis as opportunity, and the talk that I'm going to do is on the Parachute New York City approach. I'll explain what the models are about, and also talk about our outcomes evaluation. I wanted to acknowledge our evaluation team. It was really a very large and concerted effort on the parts of applied anthropologists, statisticians, health economists, administrators, research assistants. It was really a very on-the-ground and broad endeavor to look at Parachute New York City. I have no relationships to disclose. And I would like to talk to you about that Parachute is about changing crisis practice. And really, you know, if you think about it, right now is the time to focus on crisis. You've got Medicare and managed care organizations moving to value-based payments, and you've got the initial findings of the large NIMH funding of first episode psychosis interventions called coordinated specialty care just being published this month. So there's a real focus on crisis for young people who are first experiencing this, and also Parachute wanted to look at people in general for whom the current response to crisis just does not work. And in that value-based system, the current practices, which are crisis-oriented emergency services, little or no peer support or recovery focus, and very few options to involve people's social networks, really do not reflect the values of people with persistent conditions, which have to do with getting their lives back. And so the consequences of the way we do it now are traumatizing people, costing a lot of money, having people develop identities that are grounded not in hope but in hopelessness, and developing long-term identities as service users, not as people with lives worth living. And for their social support networks, the strain on them leads to their family members becoming both homeless and dependent on disability benefits. We know there's data that show that within 5 years of the first episode, 20% of people are homeless, and over time, 80% of people who have an initial psychosis episode go on to be on Social Security disability income. And that is really just not acceptable in this day and age when life is about participation and integration and living in your community. So we developed Parachute New York City, and one of my circles went away. But Parachute really was developed to provide a soft landing for people in psychosis-related mental health crisis by altering some of the existing structures and developing new ones in New York City system of care. The whole point was to restructure mobile crisis teams to be mobile treatment teams, to develop crisis respite centers, which would be home-like environments where people could step back from the situation that they were in for a period of 14 days with the help of peers in a peer and clinician staff environment to just weather a crisis. And the missing circle is a peer-operated support line where people could, in crisis, could call and not be concerned that the response to their difficulty would be the slide I showed a few minutes ago, which was emergency response to their difficulties. Ah, there it is, the peer support line. So structurally, this is what the model looked like. There's none of those little pointer things, I'm sorry. So if you look at the far left of the slide, you see in New York City, when someone has a psychiatric crisis, they call LifeNet. It's a single access to service. And the mobile crisis, this is the vision of Parachute. It actually, an implementation, which some of us will talk about later, didn't turn out exactly this way. But as we discussed yesterday, it's kind of sausage being made. And we use some other expressions that I won't say. The vision was that a mobile crisis team would do an initial visit, do an assessment, and either triage a person to a crisis respite where they could just weather this crisis for the short term rather than an inpatient setting, and also, as that arrow moves towards your right, provide ongoing treatment support through this enhanced mobile treatment large box, as often as needed up to a year. And this was using a need-adapted treatment model, which I'll talk about in a second briefly. And the team would consist of peers. Peers were integrated into all of the services throughout this demonstration project. Peers, the psychiatrists, social workers, and family therapists. And then the idea was also that in the crisis respite centers, peers who were trained in a model of how to translate their lived experience into support, intentional peer support, and that there would also be linkages to federally qualified health centers to provide health services for people. This is an extraordinarily ambitious structural change in the midst of lots of other structural change. So this is the Platonic parachute. The eligibility criteria are pretty simple. You had to be a resident of the borough, and parachute was present in four boroughs in New York City, over 18 years of age and under 65, and in Brooklyn, which was originally envisioned as a first episode borough, you had to be between 16 and 30. Experiencing a psychosis-related crisis that would otherwise have you in an ER or in the hospital. Voluntary admission, not at imminent risk, medically stable, no dementia or organic brain impairment, and to be stably housed. And that didn't mean, you know, a lot of folks in crisis were not really stably housed. They were doubling up. They were in an upheaval situation. But you could not be literally homeless. So a little bit about the models. The two models that I mentioned were needs-adapted treatment model, which is a variant of something that was developed in Northern Europe and is currently being implemented in a number of countries in Europe, Finland, Sweden, Germany, and it's called needs-adapted treatment. It provides immediate help, and that's why crisis is seen as opportunity. When people are in crisis and a team shows up to help, there's a real opportunity to engage with the person and their family. This is a social network perspective, not limited to family, but family, friends, any significant people, including other service providers in the person's network. The teams are flexible and mobile. They provide services in the person's home. They're not ACT teams. They are treatment teams that engage in long-term treatment. The first person who is contacted by the person in crisis is the person who takes responsibility for setting up that first meeting. So people are not handed off from person to person to person. There's continuity. These two last pieces, tolerance of uncertainty and dialogism, are really key to this model. And that is the mobile crisis team used to going in, doing an assessment, and making a decision about how to triage a person, making real treatment, real quick decisions, is now sitting with the uncertainty of a person and their network in the midst of a psychosis-related crisis. And the deal is not to produce a treatment plan immediately, but to let that evolve. And dialogism is to do that in conversation with the network and to help them develop their own narrative of what their troubles are. And the intentional peer support model, which, as I said, is intended to help people with lived experience take that lived experience and use it really constructively and skillfully to support others, is also based on hope that is moving towards, not moving away from, on connection, which is very similar to the dialogism, being fully present so that a trusting relationship can be developed. Mutuality, which has to do with sharing an attitude and an approach of sharing rather than helping. Very easy for people to move into that helper role. But this shows people how to bring their own experience to the other. And also it's really intentional peer support is very focused on being aware of our own worldview and how it shapes how we are with other people. And it's really a social justice model. It's not only confined to mental health treatment. It's really designed by a peer, a person with lived experience who also has a professional degree. And her desire is really to change the world one relationship at a time. So IPS is a very broadly applicable approach. And this, I won't go through this, but these are the shared values between needs-adapted treatment and intentional peer support. And they both are very much predicated on connection, relationship, hearing and honoring all voices, tolerating uncertainty and discomfort, and a common understanding that current system responses to crisis are really not adequate, that they are counterproductive, that there are human rights issues involved in them. and that they stem from fear-based stereotypes. And as a public health organization, that's really a key piece of our advocacy, is to combat the stereotypes and the fear that motivate people's responses to mental health. Non-coercion recovery is a social change venture, not really as an individual journey only. It's about self-authored lives, not functional outcomes, and that goes back to my first comment about value-based treatment. Whose values? Whose life? It's about that. And there's a whole piece about reorientation to the use of medications that we won't talk about here much, but it's a very key piece of this. And it's a very key piece in the treatment of crisis that needs to be developed further. But now I'm going to talk more about our evaluation. Our group was tasked with addressing the triple aims of this Medicaid demonstration project that have to do with improving health, improving care quality, and decreasing costs. And so we, within the limitations of the project itself, which was evolving as we went, were three questions, which was who did Parachute serve? Did these people weather crisis without having to be hospitalized? And did people experience this as a model that supported agency and choice? And we did this, we designed this study in concert with the Community Advisory Board and consumers and peers who were involved in this arena. So we used measures that were, it ain't stellar research, I believe. But it's really an excellent evaluation, and you know, as a sub piece to that. So what we did was, in order to look at those three questions, we conducted baseline and quarterly interviews for a year. We planned on doing that with 120 volunteer participants who were using Parachute services, and we tried to recruit people in proportion to their enrollment at each of the eight sites. There was a respite in each borough, and there was a mobile team in each borough. These are the measures we used, and the reason we chose these measures was that we did not have the funding or the logistics in place to develop a real comparison group. So we wanted to use measures that had published norms so that we could at least make some kind of an anchored statement about where we went. And essentially we looked at the dimensions of mental health, recovery, care quality, and service use. I'm not going to talk about the service use piece today. Actually, most of these results are pretty hot off the press. We just came out of the field the end of September, so these results are quite new. And what we realized very early on, this is our enrollment stats, and although our goal was to enroll 120 people, we over-enrolled. We enrolled 170 people, mostly at the respite sites, because this is really a very difficult population to enroll and to follow. And we especially had difficulties with people who the mobile teams were treating. These are people in crisis. The teams were concerned about putting yet another demand and burden on people who were dealing with a lot of chaos in their lives. So recruiting from the mobile teams was a real challenge, and keeping people in the project was a real challenge. As you can see, we missed about a third loss to follow-up, and that is our interviews, that's not individuals. But overall, we did 545 interviews, so we do have a lot of data. Who did Parachute serve? Well, mostly a population in need. But you can see, and we learned this about 6-8 months into it, once we started doing our interviews, that really there were two separate populations who Parachute was serving. The people using the respites, you know, that vision slide, the diagram I first showed, well, that integration of the mobile teams and the respites never really gelled. So we really ended up having two sort of separate groups. The people who the mobile teams responded to tended to be younger, more likely to be male. Everyone was urban dwelling. They were largely non-white, non-Hispanic enrollees, and they were service users, but not to a great extent. But they were using hospitals and emergency rooms. The respite guests were a little older, a little more likely to be female, and they had long-term histories of service use. How did they look in terms of the measures we used? Were they a population in need clinically? Yes, they were, for sure. Their self-rated mental health was worse than the general population and worse than people with schizophrenia based on published data. Their mental health symptoms based on the Colorado Symptom Index were worse than the general population. There was not a mean available publishing the data on people with schizophrenia. Their social functioning was worse, and their self-rated physical health for people in New York City was actually better, which I think speaks very well of New York City's health system. This is a key slide. Did parachute participants, were they able to weather crisis without hospitalization over a one-year follow-up? This slide is a little complicated, but I'll try to focus us on the real key results. So here you can see we used a two-piece linear regression model to look at these trajectories over time. And the results are reported here for the mobile team participants and for respite guests separately, because indeed they ended up receiving two separate interventions. And I would say that the most striking findings here are on your far left, and that is that the change from baseline to the first period of the follow-up, which went up to month 10, were that mobile team, get rid of that cursor. The people receiving mobile team services on their self-rated mental health improved significantly from baseline. So did people using respite services. Crisis-related symptoms decreased for people on the mobile team and for respite guests. Also, symptoms of distress decreased for both groups. Functional role, people on the mobile team, the younger group, they tended to increase their engagement in either work, school, or caregiving activities over that first period. And when we looked at the data, there was an inflection point at around 10 months where the curve changed. So that's the next column. And what happens there is that there is no change in the rate of change for the mobile team participants. So their improvement in self-rated mental health is continuing. For the respite folks, there is a change, and what happens to them is that their improvement levels off in self-rated mental health. For crisis-related symptoms, you see the same thing again for the mobile team. Their improvement in terms of crisis-related symptoms continues in that same direction. Again, the respite folks, they level off. Now remember, the people using the respites, they had 14 days, typically early on in the crisis. So here you're looking at them 10 to 12 months out from their initial engagement with the parachute teams. In terms of symptoms of distress, improved for both groups at the beginning up to month 10, and then both groups level off with respect to feeling distress. So I think that's a really important finding. So you have people's crisis is resolving, but their anxiety, their depression, mostly those two components, those are still very present for people. Functional role, unfortunately, at about month 10, what you see in that little set of text at the end is that from baseline to that first period, you got an increase up to people, about half of the people, more than half of the people engaged in functional roles. And then in that last piece, that after 10 months, drops off to about a third of people only. We don't know what's going on there yet. And in terms of hospitalization, the probability of hospitalization drops off significantly after that baseline interview. It goes from about 17% in that first intense crisis period to about 1-2% over the entire rest of the course of the follow-up. Neil tells me I have only a couple of minutes left, so I'm going to talk fast and skip along. This is about care quality, and I think what you can see is that for the mobile teams, really, the scores on these scales were high, and they tended to stay high over the course of the study. People felt that they were supported in shared decisions, especially when they were receiving, you see that number of parachute services, especially when they were receiving more parachute services. Their mental health, their confidence in their ability to cope also improved for the mobile team people. And people who had who were working with teams that had more experience tended to have more sense of recovery and confidence than people working with teams with less experience. That was because of the phased implementation of this. And then the coercion scores were really high and very positive throughout the entire study. We used a modified MacArthur admission experience scale to look at that. So high sense of engagement and choice. And then here I just wanted to look again at our kind of gold standard measure, which was the MOS SF36, and people's self-rated mental health. And what you see is at baseline, we had compared people's mental health to people with severe mental illness diagnoses. And our folks were significantly worse, both in the mobile teams and the respite guests, was significantly worse than that SMI mean of about 30, of about 40. Which is standard deviation below the general population norm. At 12 months, there is no longer a difference between the self-rated mental health of mobile team participants, which is now less than a standard deviation lower than the general population norm. Respite folks, again, are not doing as well. Older people, more service utilization history, the take home there is prevention, getting quickly. And these are just the takeaways. Parachute does serve two populations in need of crisis services, young, urban, minority males, slightly older residents also, mixed gender, who have significant prior use of mental health services. People are able to weather mental health crisis, psychosis-related crisis without hospitalization. Their symptoms improve, especially their symptoms of crisis. Hospitalization rates are even at the low end when you look at the general literature on hospitalization post a crisis, which range from about 12% to 56%, which is enormous. But we're around 17% beginning and then go down to about 2 and 3%. So this is really great at keeping, at its key goal to keep people out of the hospital. And also in its goal of promoting recovery, people do experience high levels of choice and agency. And that's, if you want any more information on this, I'm sorry we don't have handouts, but please contact me, and I'd be happy to share this. We hope to digest these results a little bit more over the next month, and I'd be glad to share it.